Got it. You ready?
Yep.
This is the
Doers.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Do it.
I love that you're doing that.
I do what I do.
Conversations with creators,
innovators,
and entrepreneurs from Lancaster and the Central Pennsylvania region.
These are the people who make Central PA a great place
to live, work, and play.
Start again.
I'm Jason Mundock. Today on the program, it's Mike Gingrich. Mike has a personal mission to develop people and organizations into their highest potential.
You know, I look at a business, I'm kind of like a walking SWAT, you know, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. I mean, I just see something and I'm boom, you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities.
That mission is a common thread throughout each aspect of Mike's life. He's the president of Digital Hill, a company that helps businesses succeed online in areas of web design, application development, and marketing. He's also a management and leadership consultant, an author, and a podcaster, and he's the co-founder and partner of a financial advisor CRM and marketing platform called Vision Financial Marketing. Mike's professional journey began in the nonprofit realm, where he experienced some amazing opportunities.
I got to travel the world doing that. So in that period of about 5 years, got to 20-some countries.
The early experience and exposure to different developing cultures informed Mike's journey. It took him from his work in nonprofits to work in the business world. Mike never lost sight of the important work that nonprofits do around the world, leading him to eventually create his own called I Give Global.
That's an attempt to allow other people to join me in some of my wanting to give back.
It's hard to keep up with all of the incredible things Mike Gingrich does to support his personal mission to help others reach their highest potential. You can learn all about it online at MikeGingrich.com.
Cool, awesome.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Brought to you by The Candy Factory.
Co-working in Lancaster.
You know, I think I try to boil it down under management, leadership, consulting. So that's kind of in the broadest terms of what it would be. And then I obviously have experience and a knack for kind of the digital online branding side and also the digital marketing side of pieces. So, I do have a ton of interest and it's tough to narrow it down at times. And I think that, you know, I look at a business, I'm kind of like a walking SWAT, you know, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. I mean, I just see something and I'm you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, you know, that's
right.
Just running through my head. So when I see a business, when I see an opportunity in business or a business problem, that's the way I do it. Now, you know, so practically how that kind of works out is with Digital Hill, then it's largely on the web solution side of things.
You know,
so we do a lot of, you can start with your basic websites. People need that. Businesses need the responsive website, but more so we get into some complexities with web software where they need some type of solution. They've got some type of problem that they want to be able to solve online. People access things, data that they want to share, all those kind of pieces.
So we're talking about like web apps.
Yes.
For the customers of your clients.
Yes.
And Digital Hill is a company you founded?
I did not, no.
Okay.
No, so I've been with that company 11 years, and but I'm not a founder there, but I have been president since 2014, I guess.
You know, what's interesting is that years ago, I came across this idea of a portfolio lifestyle.
Okay.
And the portfolio lifestyle was essentially saying that in today's day and age with technology and with remote work and with the sort of gig economy on the rise, that you don't necessarily have to have a single career or a single thing that you do. You can sort of cobble together these part-time engagements, could have a full-time job, but also do side hustles. It was a way to encompass that whole concept.
Yeah.
And when I was going through your about pages, this is what it reminded me of, is this kind of portfolio lifestyle. You're speaking, you're blogging, you're podcasting, you're managing a company, right?
Yeah.
Plus these other things. So how does your work with Digital Hill, for example, intersect or inform the other things that you're doing?
Sure. Yeah, so oftentimes, I mean, that's kind of it can be a gateway to some of the other pieces because, you know, we'll run into a business that tells us, hey, we need this. This is our problem, you know, and then I'll sit with them and be like, yeah, well, that's a little bit of what you got going on. But, you know, can we talk about this and this as well? I mean, how about this? Can you answer this for me? And when they can't, you know, obviously we've got another avenue there. And so maybe that's a consulting piece. It's a business operation piece. And, you know, they thought it was, we need social media, you know.
Right.
but there's bigger things that are going on there that they need help with. So that's one way that informs it. I think with Digital Hill, I mean, one of the things that we do is a digital marketing piece there. And so the speaking kind of came naturally out of that. I did blogging on that. I mean, you kind of share, hey, these are best practices. These are things that are going on. This is what's new. This is what's changing. And then out of that kind of building maybe some authority online, people liking that content, I got invited to speak, you know, at different places.
Uh-huh.
And then
you become an expert really in a field or
right,
an area.
Right. So you get invited to speak. And so then that opens up more opportunities to speak. And then you're at those speaking events and you're talking with others there who run the conferences or other speakers, and you talk about other topics, and they're like, hey, can you come over here and talk about this? And that's where you get some of the management or leadership. And so it's all...
I see. So your work with Digital Hill is primarily in that marketing space, digital marketing, web, yep, and that sort of thing. And then all of a sudden, you're also then engaging on this other side of things, which is leadership, right?
And those are some of my passions, you know. So I have a master's degree in organizational development and leadership from Shippensburg. And so I always kind of look at things from that type of perspective or, you know, backgrounds. Like, you know, everything rises and falls on leadership. So, you know, your digital marketing, I mean, because it's a brand voice. What are you going to do online, you know?
Yeah.
And how are you coming across that way? Often comes back to, again, leadership. You know, those types of pieces. So, so my primary gig at this point has been Digital Hill, managing that company. I definitely have these offshoots with Mike Gingrich Global, which is kind of the speaking author consulting piece that goes beyond digital into brand management, management efficiencies, leadership consulting, and even more just personal development, because a couple of my books, you know, lend themselves that way. And then, you know, another new venture is this tech startup, Vision Financial Marketing. Then, so that kind of, again, comes out of that, my experience in the web space. And technically, this was a client that we first did a website for, you know, at some point in time. And then we talk and we have, they're like, yes, I think there's an opportunity here. And what if we went together on this? And what if we launched this startup for this space? It's a CRM and a marketing system for financial advisors.
Did you have experience in that industry?
Not in the financial industry. That's what the client brought. Yeah, yeah. So they are financial advisors, and we had done their website, and they had been a what was called an FMO, which financial marketing organization. So they had a network of financial advisors. Hey, this is the problem financial advisors have. And so our goal is to solve that. They need the technology expertise. And so we formed a partnership to do that.
That's awesome.
Don't think of me as linear for sure.
No, not at all.
It's weaving, it's bobbing. There's things that are curves and, you know, definitely non-linear.
And then there's parts of what you're doing that that really appeal to me, and that's the media creation.
Yeah.
Right? So I know you're podcasting. Yeah. Halftime Mike is your podcast.
Right.
Doing a show called Magnet Marketers.
Yes.
And the 2 minutes with Mike vlog. Tell me about how you got into media, and you know what that does for you.
It's the attempt to be a resource. You know, I always tell any company I'm working with, you know, how can we position you as an authority in your field? And, you know, so taking that personally to myself, I think that, you know, first it is blogging. I mean, blogging is probably one of the main things that I do. And, you know, the blog is my own MikeGingrich.com blog has grown to the point where I actually have a significant number of people that contribute as well. So,
oh, wow.
So it's a growing footprint that's more than me, but I curate and moderate and, you know, accept what's going to be on there, that type of things, all within that arenas that I'm talking about. And then I've just evolved as some of those technologies have evolved, you know, so there's blogging, but then, there's a growth in the podcast arena. So like, you know, you can reach an audience that appeals to them.
Right.
Same thing then with the 2 minutes with Mike, the live video kind of pieces and those types of pieces, wanting to, you know, find a way to reach them using the means that is current people are consuming today.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Visit us online at coworkinginlancaster.com.
Home of the Candy Factory, a co-working space in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I want to hear your backstory. As we've evolved with technology and as we've evolved with the way that people communicate today, I have a feeling that there was a bit of a journey there for you.
Yeah, because with a college degree in religion, I mean, I'm totally equipped for business, startups, marketing, and the technology kind of things, right? You know, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so that was the background, the starting point, and began work in a nonprofit. And then had a number of roles within a nonprofit, but one of the most significant was I helped coordinate international short-term assignments for kind of college-age students. You know, so you know, one of those things, almost like a internship or that type of piece, where they could go and get 4 months to 12 months in an international location where we would have partners. So I did this from stateside, but I got to travel the world doing that. So in that period of about 5 years, got to 20-some countries.
Wow. What a great opportunity.
Coordinated. Yeah, absolutely. I look back on that. I mean, the travel, it was tremendous, you know, and so met people in these locations because we'd have to go and kind of set that up, you know, contract together. Hey, you want this to be beneficial for the location where they're going? What do you need help with? What are they going to do? You know, those types of pieces and connect the dots there. Make sure that was a good possibility. So on a couple of those trips towards the end of that 5 years, this is when we talk in early 2000s, noted that it just seemed like, you know, we were getting in some significantly poverty ripe areas. I mean, where poverty was just, you know, a terrible problem. How are you going to overcome this? What are you going to do? And traditional kind of methods of nonprofit giving money just didn't seem like a long-term solution.
Okay. And not sustainable.
Exactly. Right. Began to get exposed at that point in time a little bit to kind of the microfinance type thing where, you know, train someone in because these are people with great potential, but, you know, a terrible circumstance to begin with.
Sure.
But very hardworking, entrepreneurial, if given the opportunity. And so seeing a little bit of this kind of concept where you can kind of coach them. I mean, just think of, you know, it's kind of like assets here in Lancaster on a small scale, on, you know, but on an individual scale. So let's say that there's a group. You can team up, train maybe six people who want to start their own businesses. And you're going to give them each, you know, $50 in that context. And, you know, so, but they're responsible together to kind of use that money, start their businesses, repay those loans over time, and see that grow kind of piece. Mm-hmm. And I saw that, I liked that, and I realized that this was a bigger need, and I was inspired to want to dive into business more. The business was a way to solve some of the world's problems in this regard. Commerce, I mean, everyone could speak the language of commerce, wherever you go, worldwide, you know?
Sure.
I need this. Will you give me this in exchange? I mean, those things make sense, any culture.
Sure.
You know, and kind of what I was seeing in the nonprofit realm too much was this, you know, to try to give a hand out and then dependency, all those kind of things could take place. So I feel like there needed to be another way. This seemed like a positive way. I wanted to learn more about it. I had this degree in religion. It wasn't doing me any good out there with what I was seeing. So I went back for a marketing and business degree, ultimately the master's in organizational development and leadership, and left the nonprofit, took a job in a marketing company, was able to get that because within the nonprofit, one of the things that happened was, in like any nonprofit, you have low budget, people wear multiple hats, and like, you know, say, hey, somebody started this website, and the guy left, we don't know what to do with it. Mike, can you take a look at this? You know, kind of digging in. Okay, hey, okay, this is what a CMS is, a content management system. I mean, just, you know, Googling this stuff, figuring this stuff out.
Right.
And I became the go-to person on the website. You know, I just, because I could figure some things out.
Right.
And realize that I kind of like this. And then it was like, hey, Mike, we need to change this copy on here to say what's coming up on the website, you know, the marketing kind of piece there. And I was like, oh, don't say that. You want to say this. And all of a sudden kind of realized, hey, I kind of had a knack for, yeah, the message, the way it should be communicated. And so I began doing that kind of stuff for the nonprofit. And ultimately, when I wanted to make that shift, that gave a marketing company in Harrisburg enough of a inclination to say, I think this guy can make the leap, you know?
Right.
Nonprofit to a for-profit sales account manager role. And I just began to dig into that. That was in the digital marketing, signage, not quite billboard, but it was just beginning to evolve with the digital screens on a smaller scale than a digital billboard kind of piece. And so, again, it just evolved that we had clients that, hey, you know, you're helping us with this. Can you also help us with this? It was web.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've kind of done that. So let me check, you know, these kind of pieces. I dabbled in it. I could figure some things out. And, you know, so once again, that opened up some doors. The biggest pivot was, you know, nonprofit to business world, kind of cutting my teeth in the sales role in marketing arenas. And that kind of evolved then into, you know, another different sales role with Digital Hill, ultimately becoming president of that. And then, you know, those pieces kind of evolving to the Mike Gingrich Global.
Sure.
So
it sounds like, you jumped into this for-profit world, but kept and maintained the kind of the underlying vision or mission of what you were working with in the nonprofit
space. That was the goal. That was the goal. Say, how can I make a difference? You know, that personal mission kind of coming back again to how can I develop people and organizations into their highest potential? And so always keeping in a remembrance or a back in my mind, you know, how could I help those people? I guess a side story is I began to invest then in some entities that were doing this microfinance internationally. I could give a loan and invest and see how in the Dominican Republic that was going to, you know, help this community of 7 or 8 single mothers start up their own businesses and, you know, develop skills in that area. So,
sure.
So business was allowing me to contribute in those areas. And so, yeah, there was always a sense of mission in what I did, but a sense of bigger mission and how can I give back globally as well.
What was the resistance? Like, did you feel any tension moving to a for-profit space?
Absolutely. Multiple things. So number one, the people in the nonprofit didn't understand that. You're going to do what? You know, you're selling out. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, so sure.
On the nonprofit realm. In the business realm, there was, within some of the other sales team, there's like, this guy's from a nonprofit background. He can't do anything, you know, I mean, that type of thing. And for myself, definitely a learning curve. I mean, even though I was pursuing the master's, there's a difference between the academic study of that and the practical day-to-day business sales skills and all that kind of thing.
Any regrets moving away from nonprofit?
None whatsoever. Hindsight says probably should have done it faster. I mean, I move at the speed that most nonprofits don't like to move at.
I got you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They typically like to be a little bit more methodical. You got to have maybe some committee decision-making, that type of thing. I am highly efficient, highly effective, highly delegate, you know, I mean, we got to move. Time is of the essence. Let's go right, left. I don't care if we make some mistakes along the way. We need to move. One of my core values as a person is just always have a bias towards action. You try to get some counsel, but you never want to just get stalled in that. Have a bias for action. What is the next practical step we can take to move something forward?
This is the Doers Podcast, conversations with
creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs
from all around Central Pennsylvania.
I'm Jason Mundock, talking today with Mike Gingrich, a man who wears many hats, both professionally and personally, but all with the underlying mission to help others reach their highest potential. Yeah. So you started in the nonprofit world, shifted to the business world, taking those core values with you, but then you also started a nonprofit, correct?
Yeah, yes.
Tell me about that.
That's an attempt to allow other people to join me in some of my wanting to give back. Basically, some of these things. I remember being in the Philippines on a trip. I remember being in Cambodia on a trip, being in Indonesia on a trip, and just seeing some extreme poverty, but extremely warm, dedicated, hardworking people, you know, stuck. And these were the kind of people that needed not a handout, but a hand up, you know, and so I always held on to that. And, you know, through business, I wanted to be able to, you know, use some of what I earned to give back in that regard. And, but then I came to the point one day where I was like, you know, I think I can multiply my efforts if I open this up to others to join me in this. I'll be the champion that shows, here's a need, here's an opportunity. You know, they don't have to go look for it. They don't have to wonder if it's out there. I'll tell them about that. You know, blogging, videos, whatever it is.
Sure.
And I'm going to help this. And I think I can do more good if I also open it up for others to do that. And the nonprofit, the 501c3, seemed like, you know, the best avenue to allow others to join me in that process.
So tell me about the actual nonprofit.
iGiveGlobal.org, basically to help those in international locations in great need and with limited opportunity. For me, it's staying in touch with some of my contacts from those early 2000s.
Sure.
Along the way. Some of them were, you know, teenagers who are now adults in, you know, key leadership roles in their areas, but and they're in touch with their communities, what's happening there. I can stay in touch with them. We can find ways to do it. Others have just kind of materialized over time. And that's kind of, you know, coming back to some of the ways I've been involved in Northern Iraq, you know, for example. So,
yeah, tell me how you helped.
It was in, what was it, around 2014 when ISIS, you know, went into Iraq and they took over a city, Mosul. And hundreds of thousands were displaced. They went for refuge in Erbil, which is kind of a northern capital, the Kurdish area of Iraq.
Okay.
They were living in these tent camps. I remember seeing a story, CNN, that type of thing, these people, the conditions, and talking with some guys in my community, and they're saying, you know, can we do something? Can we do something? So we just began to say, okay, who do we know who might know someone? And ultimately, we got in touch with a contact that was a pastor in Baghdad of a church who was moving to Erbil to help serve and be a advocate for these people living in tent camps whose homes have been destroyed by ISIS. And we said, okay, can we help? Can we raise funds? And can we get some supplies? What's a need? He said, we need to get these people from a tent camp into at least a temporary apartment.
Got it.
And we said, okay, boom, there's the mission. Let's help them get out of the tent camp. And so by the time we got there, it was in 2016, and I went. My first time there was with a group of guys, and we took over. We took funds, and we secured apartments. We bought mattresses, that type of thing. We helped families, just a number. He said, we can't help everyone, but hopefully we can help some.
Sure.
So that was the start of it.
And so this is through the nonprofit that, yes, you've established, that you're able to,
yes,
to make this work.
Yeah, yeah. Fast forward a little bit further then, and 2017 that ISIS was pushed out, conquered. Mosul was recaptured by Iraq, U.S. help there, that type of thing, and became, Mosul was back under Iraqi control. And so now you've got this devastated city. I mean, just from the war, from the retaking of that, I mean, it was the most massive urban warfare since World War II. I mean, just sheer devastation there. So now these people could maybe go back, but on a couple visits back, you know, it's just rubble.
Right.
That was kind of a next phase then. Now can we get them home? And
right,
to get
back.
Them home, how can we help them rebuild their house? By that point in time, I was doing distance running, marathons, triathlons, that type of thing. And there was a international marathon in this city where I'd been, Erbil, capital, northern capital of Kurdish Iraqi area. And I looked at that and I said, that looks like a next step for me. I'm going to run that marathon. I'm going to invite people to give a donation to help these people rebuild. So it was called, you know, Run for Iraq, rebuild these homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my goal was to raise funds through running this marathon in Iraq to raise awareness of their plight, to want to go back, not able to go back. Can we raise funds to help some of them rebuild, repair their homes so that they can go and do that? So I went and I get to sit with some of these families in Erbil, and I use my technology skills there. I did live video. I did 2 minutes with Mike. I recorded these things. We talk with them. Hey, here's, you know, what's been happening. Tell me your story. you know, what's it look like back there? And they would tell me, I guess some of them show me pictures on their phones, you know, of the rubble and that type of thing. So I mean, it's just firsthand stuff.
Sure.
And I said, you know, folks, I'm running this marathon. And can you give me $26.2, you know, that type of thing, whatever it is, double of that, that type of thing. I was able to raise about $6,000.
Fantastic.
And ran the marathon, which is another story in itself. We, you know, dust storm came in, sky's yellow. I'm out there and running this marathon, you know.
Throw
it's,
a rack.
It's just yellow, you know. Yeah, yeah. And it's hot, you know. It was crazy, but it was probably one of the most alive moments I've ever had. You know, I just... You're there. You're in the element. I mean, this is that sense of I'm in Iraq. I'm out here. I don't know Arabic. I don't know Kurdish, and I'm just following the guy in front of me. And we're gonna get 26.2 miles. People are looking at us, clapping for us, and the sky's yellow. This is Iraq. We're doing this. You know, I did it all by myself.
That's insane. I mean, you gotta understand, for me, like, even running a marathon, like, in Harrisburg is insane, right? Yeah. Like, I have such respect and admiration for people who can just do that part. And then you take it to this completely different level, like, just this insane level. Doing it for other people, doing it for a cause, doing it in this place that, you know, we see on TV is just this war-torn, you know, beat-up area. That's really fantastic.
And it was my goal to kind of show another side of that as well, because like I could show by going there, you know, because everybody would say you're gonna, I mean, it's the common question, you're gonna run a marathon. Oh yeah, well, where? You know, northern Iraq. What did you say? Northern Iraq. What are you doing? You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And but my goal there was to show them, hey, actually, Erbil's a pretty stable place. Yes, Mosul, you know, only 50 minutes away, type thing, and but a whole nother world, and that's where it had been, but not all of Iraq is chaos, is, you know, terrorists everywhere, you know, that type of thing. This is stable. This is a nice place. There's nice people, you know, and I was able to introduce them to that. So I think that was, I have a passion for that, you know, kind of just breaking down those misconceptions, helping people, doing something that's out there on the edge, you know, whether that's traveling to a place or the, you know, actually the marathon itself. I like to push some of the edges.
Yeah, that's really awesome. What's the future for Mike Gingrich?
Yeah. A passion that I'd like to pull off in the next year is what I call a leadership experience. So, you know, we have these traditional conferences. You can go to a leadership conference, or you can get a coach, you can get a mentor, that type of thing. But typically these are fairly static things. So it's going to be like this conversation where we're sitting here. You know, I can try to tell you about Iraq. I can try to tell you about a place that I've been. But if I truly want you to be impacted, if I can get your feet on the ground there, that will do it.
Totally different experience.
Yeah. And so I'd like to pilot a leadership experience is what I call it. So, you know, kind of a 7-10 day type experience where we go to a place and we explore it from a business perspective. What's happening in business here? What are we learning? We'll sit with some people doing, you know, small business owners, that type of thing. And then we kind of, we debrief that. Okay, what did we see? What did we learn? What's that mean for me? What's it mean for you? What could you take back to your business from this? It's kind of like an inductive method. You go and you experience something, and then you try to cross the bridge. What does this say for me personally? What's it say for my business? And so I want to bring some leadership things around that. And I think that that's a coming model of leadership management, business development. Get out of your context for a little bit. Have someone help you get immersed in something, experience that, and then debrief it to bring it back to what it could mean for me in my context. You'll come back with a bigger mindset, new ideas, and a framework for how you want to do something differently.
Man, you're always on the move.
Yeah.
I know you're busy.
Yeah.
So thanks for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to chat about this. It's exciting stuff, and it's going to be fun to watch it.
Good to chat.
The Doers Podcast is produced by Jason Mundock at The Candy Factory,
a co-working space located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Find links and show notes for this podcast and all of our episodes online
at The Candy Factory website,
coworkinginlancaster.com.
Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
What you love to do.
This is going to be such a success.
Hey friends, Jason Mundock here. All of the voices in our intro and outro are actually Candy Factory members.
Wait, what?
It's a great community, and yes, we have a good time because frankly, work doesn't have to suck. And we all know that working alone does suck, so if you're a freelancer, entrepreneur, remote worker, or even a student here in Central PA, check out coworkinginlancaster.com and consider joining us at the Candy Factory, an awesome co-working space in Lancaster. Starting at just $50 a month.
Oh, yeah.
That's for a community membership. You can meet other doers in a super creative and collaborative space, tap into business resources to help you get your job done efficiently, and learn all kinds of new and inspiring stuff through our network of really smart people, i.e., our members and guests. We even have a podcast club for members who want to make their own.
Wink, wink.
There's a membership level for everyone, so don't hesitate. Check it all out at coworkinginlancaster.com. Do it.
Do it.